Listeners like you make living on Earth possible each week. Please contribute today by clicking on the donate link to the left of the page. And thanks.
In 2001, famine ravaged the sub-Saharan country of Malawi. William Kamkwamba and his family survived, but the suffering left him determined to find a way to protect them from drought and hunger. William was just 14. He had to drop out of school because his family couldn't afford the fees. So William hit the books on his own to learn how to build a windmill using whatever he could find. Now William and journalist Brian Mueller have written a book, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. William, Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
William, why did you decide a windmill would keep your family from facing another famine?
So what needed to be done to harvest enough food, we need to start doing irrigation. But the only way to start irrigation is to have a certain type of machine that can be pumping water to irrigate our crops. So it's when I decided that if I can build one of these machines, I can be able to do that.
So tell me about actually making this. Where did you get the parts? I imagine in rural Malawi, you can't just go to the hardware store and say, hey, I need the parts for a windmill. Where did things come from?
So at the time when I was making my windmill, I didn't even have money that I can use to go to the hardware and buy materials. So my materials, I found them at a junkyard. Every time I go to the junkyard to look for my materials, I didn't have any specific material to look for, but I was just picking up any piece of metal, thinking that maybe I'll use it. And then when I was doing that, lots of people were laughing at me, thinking that I'm going crazy, because they say that it is not normal for a normal person going to a junkyard, collecting all the garbages, and then telling people that I'm trying to build a windmill.
And Brian?
Yeah, I was just going to give a little bit of background and brag on William a little bit. You know, when he was going to the library with reading these books, and the first one was this British physics book called Explaining Physics, William really didn't know how to read English that well. But it had these really beautiful illustrations and diagrams, and he was able to basically take these diagrams, and where it said like figure 10, he would look into the text and he would learn the English words and basically was able to teach himself basic physics. And he was really interested in bicycle dynamos and how they worked, because people use dynamos to power their headlamps and their bicycles. And so he would always go around and he would ask, how does this work? Why is it producing light? And nobody knew. And so he realized that you can actually take the wires out of the lamp itself, and they produce kind of a shock, and he would kind of shock himself while he was spinning it. And it was able to figure out that you can ram these wires into the AC plug of a radio. And he saw this other book with the windmills on the cover. It said, like, you know, windmills produce electricity through spinning motion. He kind of put these two things together, the dynamo with a spinning motion of the generator inside, and the turbine is a generator.
Uh-huh.
And that's what kind of brought it all together.
So you're picking through this stuff in the junkyard. Everybody thinks you're basically crazy. You can't go to school. And yet you're finding stuff that starts to sort of kind of look like it could be a windmill.
Yeah, when I was going through the junkyard, I was just wandering around in tall grasses looking for any kind of a piece, putting them together. Once I was picking up pieces of metal, I was examining it before I take it home, thinking how exactly am I going to use this type of piece, yeah.
Then what did you use for the blades? What were the rotors, the blades?
For the blades, I used the PVC pipes, which I melted them over the fire, and then I stretched them. For the shaft of the windmill, I used the shock absorber to make a shaft, and then using an old bicycle frame for the frame of the windmill.
And reading this is just amazing. I mean, you didn't even have a drill. So to make the holes, you had to, what, you were heating up a nail and poking it through the plastic? Is that right?
Yeah. For the drill, I was using the nail. I was heating the nail, and then when the nail gets hot, I'll be driving hot nail into a PVC pipe. It was a slow process, because by the time I'm picking it up to the place where I want to drill, the nail has cooled, so I had to learn back and forth.
So melted pieces of PVC pipe for the blades, a tractor fan from a tractor engine for the hub, hooked up to an old shock absorber for the crankshaft. Then what? Then you need something that's actually going to make the juice, make the electricity. Where did that come from?
After I found all these things, I remained with one piece which I couldn't find at the junkyard. That piece was a bicycle dynamo, a generator to generate electricity. Luckily enough, my friend Gilbert bought it for me. So when he bought that dynamo, I was able to generate electricity when I hooked it up to the windmill.
And then came the moment of truth, where you put this on top of a tower, which you also made. Tell me about that. Tell me about the time when you first got this thing spinning.
Yeah, when the blades were spinning and then the dynamo generating electricity and then the light bulb coming on from the windmill and the people started clapping hands and then there was a crowd of people watching. There was kids and then the kids pushing each other for a better look. For me, it was like, wow, this is the time now. I was very happy because I have been working on the project for quite a long time, and then I was like proving to people that what I've been working on, it wasn't craziness, but it was something useful which can be generating electricity. For me, it was one of the exciting moments of my life.
So while you were rummaging through the junkyard, people thought you were crazy. But once you had a light and a radio and things like this in your house, what did people in the village of Wimbe begin to think of you then?
After I did all this, people started coming to charge their mobile phones. There was also another time when we experienced the drought in 2005. And then what was happening was that people started pointing to my windmill, say that this is a witch tower, is chasing away the rain. It's not science.
Wait a minute. People were blaming your windmill for the fact that there was no rain.
Yeah, because they were seeing that the wind started blowing. When the wind is blowing, it was blowing the clouds, and then my windmill was speeding so fast. That's why people say that, no, it's this machine that is something magic. It's the witch tower is blowing away the rain clouds.
Brian, you've covered Africa a lot as a journalist. Give us some sense of the kind of mindset that was at work there when people saw a windmill and thought it was chasing away the clouds and causing a drought.
The way it was explained to me in Malawi is there are too many problems for God and man alone, so there exists this third invisible world of magic that helps them along. And so William, when he starts collecting this garbage, I mean, not only people, they say he's crazy or that he's smoking marijuana or whatever, you know, he's talking insane. He's saying, I'm going to create electricity from wind. And they said, only a witch can do that. You know, good luck.
You know, William, it occurs to me, you brought a light, a physical light, into your house, but it seems to me you brought a different kind of light to your village, the light of using science.
I've just noticed that nowadays the mindset of people have really changed. Where before they are thinking that they cannot do anything in terms of science, it's only people from the West or from European people can be doing something for the science. So that type of mindset for lots of people have really changed.
Brian, do you recall when you first heard or learned about what it was William was doing?
Yeah, clearly. Prior to meeting William, I'd been a reporter in Africa for about 5 years, and most of that time was spent covering the war in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the whole time I was working in Congo, Africans themselves would always ask us, why do you guys always cover our bad news? Why do you never cover our good news? And I see this Wall Street Journal article about a guy in Malawi who builds windmills out of garbage. And I said, man, this is that story. This is the story I've been looking to tell. And to me, this is the way you save Africa. You don't throw money at it. You don't throw food aid at it. You go and find these guys, and we need to comb that continent, and we need to find guys like this and not give them money, but just give them little slivers of opportunity and lift them up.
William, do I understand correctly that in your native language, there's no word for windmill? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I used the word magetsamphepo, so it just means electric wind.
Electric wind. That's got a nice ring to it. Yeah, so that's how you describe it to people when they ask, what is that? You said electric wind. Brian Mueller and William Kamkwamba co-authored The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. Thank you both very much for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
William Kamkwamba's going back to school at a South African Academy for Future African Leaders. He's already started a club there for fellow inventors. He calls it the Doers Club. I can't wait to see what he does next. On the next Living on Earth, tiny architects teach us new ways to ventilate buildings.
The really interesting trick that termites have done is they've learned a way to exploit turbulent wind energy that for a long time wind engineers have kind of looked down upon.
Green design inspired by termites. Next time on Living on Earth. Living on Earth is produced by the World Media Foundation. Our crew includes Bobby Bascom, Eileen Balinski, Bruce Gellerman, Annie Glosser, Ingrid Lobet, Helen Palmer, Jessica Elise Smith, Ike Sriskandaraja, and Mitra Taj, with help from Sarah Calkins, Marilyn Gavoni, and Sammy Souza. Our interns are Quincy Campbell and Nirja Parekh. Jeff Turton is our technical director. Allison Learish-Dean composed our themes. You can find us anytime at loe.org. Steve Kerwood is our executive producer. I'm Jeff Young. Thanks for listening.
Funding for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation, supporting coverage of emerging science, and Stonyfield Farm, organic yogurt and smoothies. Stonyfield pays its farmers not to use artificial growth hormones on their cows. Details at stonyfield.com. Support also comes from you, our listeners. The Ford Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, and the Oak Foundation, supporting coverage of climate change and marine issues. The Rockefeller Foundation and its campaign for American workers. More at rockfound.org. And Pax World Mutual Funds, socially and environmentally sustainable investing. Pax World for tomorrow. On the web at paxworld.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.